Accession number 10465, rule 3.
I was on leave at the time, and there's no doubt that we all felt that the atomic bomb was something which just had to be dropped, because if we were going to make an attack on Japan and their homeland, the casualties would have been extraordinarily high, not only to our own forces, but obviously to the Japanese too. And it would have been the most appalling slaughter, far higher than what was killed by the atomic bombs themselves.
Did you ever come across the Indian forces who had been captured by the Japanese, who were being used by them, the so-called Indian National Army?
Yes, we when we were crossing the Irrawaddy, a company of Sikhs went downstream, about three or four miles downstream, and just below Pagan, where there suddenly sort of people appeared with white flags, and there was a complete brigade of the Indian National Army there, and most of whom were prepared to surrender and come straight back. And the main problem we had then was getting them back down the LOC.
What did the attitude of the sepoys who'd remained loyal seem to be towards the INA?
They were a little brusque, I think, because they thought it should have ought to have been unnecessary for them. But a number of them did certainly understand that what the Japanese were and the pressures that would have been put onto these sepoys, and they said, well, what else could they do?
What was your own attitude towards the INA people?
Well, of course, I didn't like them, and I would have said, what else could they do? I mean, if they were being persuaded in Singapore and Hong Kong, and don't forget, they weren't only Indian sepoys from the Indian Army, they were also Indian nationals from Malaya, Singapore and Hong Kong and wherever else they might be living at the time.
Taken from civilian life.
Taken from civilian life, yes. Although when we got into Siam, we were told to expect about 300,000 Malay Tamil coolies up in Siam, but of course when we got there, they'd gone. And I suppose they felt the easiest way was to get back to Malaya themselves. But we had to provide for them on our ration strength when we went into Siam.
Did you know much at that time about the leader of the INA, Subhas Chandra Bose?
Knew him by name, obviously. But, I mean, he was another member of the Congress and who had rather more extreme views than perhaps, say, Mr. Nehru had.
Now, you were saying that you were involved with the disarmament of the Japanese in Siam, in Bangkok.
Yes.
Can you tell me what you remember about that?
Well, it was quite an orderly process. When we went in, General Evans was worried that they might possibly start fighting again, and so when we went in, we to begin with camped round Don Muang Airport, and until we built up a force, I think the size of two brigades, we didn't move out into Bangkok to start on the work of disarming the Japanese and rehabilitating the various areas within Siam itself, or helping to rehabilitate them.
Did you come across any tendency for anybody to try to take revenge against the Japanese in Siam for what had happened there?
No, I didn't. There were rumours of it that it had happened, but the Siamese themselves, whilst they'd helped from the point of view of humanity, I suppose, they'd helped the British and prisoners of war, but they didn't then suddenly turn on the Japanese, and they tried to make it quite clear to us that they disliked the Japanese, because obviously we, to begin with, had to treat them as enemy because they declared war on us, but that was soon put on one side, and they were not considered as being at war with us, and quite friendly relations developed between the people who were in there and the Siamese. The Siamese, I think, didn't like the fact that it was the Indian Army that was occupying Siam.
Why was that?
I think they thought it was another Asian race which they didn't regard as necessarily being superior to them. They were only there because of the backing that came from Britain, or the fact that it was Britain that was doing it, but was doing it with Asian troops which they didn't like.
Did you accept these? Were you present at the surrender of any senior Japanese in Bangkok?
Yes.
Do you remember any of their names?
I've got a list of them somewhere. In fact, I was looking at it the other day.
What kind of ranks did they have?
Well, the senior man was, I think he was a full general, and we had a lieutenant general who was in charge of intendants, or the in charge of the administration.
What was the manner in which they surrendered?
They came up and surrendered their swords in an orderly manner. They, I think one thing that we were suspicious that they may have done was to have substituted their own samurai swords by other swords, but it was difficult to understand how they would have got them out of Siam.
Did you ever come across disbelief amongst the Japanese that this could have happened to their country? Did they seem to be dazed at all?
No. We used to have meetings with the Japanese from time to time, and they were always very correct. They always came in and made a slight bow, or a proper bow, and took orders from us, which had to be couched in a particular form. I think we had to say, in the name of the Supreme Allied Commander, we order you to do so and so. And as long as it was in the name of the Supreme Allied Commander, it was done.
Did you ever meet Mountbatten in Southeast Asia? Did he ever come round on a visit?
He came round to down into Arakan on one occasion, and he came to Bangkok when we were there taking the surrender of the Japanese. We had a major parade there.
What kind of impression did he make?
He was a naval officer. I was an army officer, and I felt that from time to time he could have well left the land to us ourselves.
One hears that he adopted what you might call showmanship tactics.
Was undoubtedly so. Yes, he did. I mean, the improvised box on which he stood was probably far more costly than any other box might have been.
We haven't said anything about air support. So I think that you were telling me earlier that you got very good support from the United States Air Force.
Yes, first of all, in Arakan we had RAF support, and then later when we went to and onto the central front, which was coming down from Imphal, going down the Gungor Valley, we came under support of the USAAF. And there they were very, very good indeed. And they were very wholesale, of course, but to on one position that we wished to take without exciting the Japanese, that we had the division present, they put in a major Air Force attack for us, and they, when we arranged it with them, General Evans had asked for the blockage on the road that the Japanese were creating to be moved, and so they just put in squadrons of aircraft, and firstly some fortresses, then the B-26s, the Hudson bomber, and finally some pursuit planes, after which they turned around and said that we were on our own.
One understands that the American Air Force were not at all hidebound by rules, but that they were very flexible.
They were most flexible. In fact, the same man that did this operation for us at one stage said to the general that they had two Norseman aircraft going back to Calcutta every day, and that if we wanted a case of gin bringing forward, there would be no difficulty in that being brought forward. And so it made life a little more pleasant than it otherwise might have been.
This officer was called Ziegler, who was...
Yes, Major Ziegler. There was one amusing thing to end with, I suppose. During the time we were in the box, we had, of course, lost all our code books when the headquarters was overrun, and so there was no point in sending anything in code. And General Meservy used to have conversations over the radio, which I would be present as a duty officer, when he would start to try and explain to brigadiers in rather guarded speech, and one I do remember was a place called Bogey Yong, which General Meservy said to the brigadier, he said, "I want you to try and stop the Japs playing golf tomorrow." And of course the brigadier really didn't understand what was going on. He was merely looking at the word B-O-G-I-G-Y-U-A-N-G, Bogey Yong, and he didn't connect that obviously with golf. A further one was K-Y-A-U-K-L-E-T, Chowklet, and that brigadier was surprised to hear the general say, "Pay a visit to Bourneville tomorrow and stop the Japs crossing there, would you?" And I suppose one more of them was the continual reference to the officer commanding 5 Div, who was always called the Umbrella Man. And when I asked General Meservy why he was referred to as the Umbrella Man, he said, "Where did I buy my umbrellas before the war?" Well, of course, not being a regular officer, I probably replied somewhere at the back streets of Stoke-on-Trent. In fact, Briggs was the name of the shop in Piccadilly where all army officers bought their umbrellas.